character in Xanadu. I never dreamed she would now be a wonderful friend. 19. My first job out of college was in finance, working in a management training program with then Chemical Bank, now J.P. Morgan Chase. 20. I would rather have wine than dessert. And that's all the time we have. That was 25 Things You Don't Know About Me by Natalie Morales. That concludes today's readings from Us Weekly. This has been Lydia Coppell for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American's Business and Oil and Lifestyle sections, followed by Far West Texas News at 7. Now airing on the Noon Book Hour, a selection from our Western section, Under the Sweetwater Rim by Louis L'Amour. Deep in Indian country, Major Mark Devereaux and his men find a grisly scene. A wagon train savagely attacked with no survivors. One of the wagons originally with the group is missing. In it is a fortune in gold and Devereaux's daughter, Mary. The slaughter, Devereaux learns, was not the work of Indians, but of a murderous outlaw band. With the stakes rising in a deadly game, the only wild card is Lieutenant Tenador Bryan, who is riding with the missing wagon, against orders. Devereaux knows Bryan is a good soldier, but is he good enough to protect a saddlebag full of gold and the life of his daughter? Under the Sweetwater Rim by Louis L'Amour, weekdays at noon and 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening. Don't forget to set your clock ahead 1 hour before you go to bed Saturday night.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 62 and mostly cloudy. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the mid-60s. Then tomorrow, cloudy with a high in the mid-70s. Tomorrow night, it will be cloudy with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, March 6th. DOE Research Director details focus on produced water. The story was written by Melanie McEwen. As the U.S. Department of Energy works to oversee the nation's energy resources, it is also engaged in research to better understand what it oversees. Elena Subia Melchert, Director, Upstream Oil and Gas Research Division at the Department of Energy, detailed those efforts during the University of Texas Permian Basin's Water Lecture Series recently. Quote, "We want you to understand what we're doing with upstream activity, why we do it, and how we do it. We have partnerships with the industry, with academia," she said during the virtual event. She detailed the department's establishment of field laboratories, including three in the Permian Basin. Two are hydraulic fracturing test sites established in conjunction with the Gas Technology Institute, and one is for engineered water for improvement of oil recovery from fractured reservoirs in partnership with the University of Texas at Austin. Subsequent generations of field labs bring to 17 the number of labs studying enhanced oil recovery in the conventional space to EOR in the unconventional space, to studying everything from geophysics to geochemistry and more. Despite dramatic videos of people near hydraulic fracturing sites lighting water from their faucets on fire, Melchert said the labs have found no adverse effects from fracturing operations. Produced water research is one of the agency's four core research areas alongside onshore basin-specific research, artificial intelligence research, and offshore research. Melchert said her motto is, quote, turn produced water from a waste to a resource, end quote. The DOE is in the early research and development stages of a water desalination hub to treat salinity in non-traditional water resources, including produced water. This will be done through materials research and development, new process research and development, modeling and simulation tools, and integrated data and analysis. Between 2012 and 2017, the agency has funded almost 60 water research projects with a total value of more than $100 million. It also became one of the first federal agencies to work with the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers on a sustainable produced water policy, regulatory framework, and management in the Texas oil and gas industry from 2019 and beyond. Those projects have focused on wellbore integrity, reduced freshwater use, and developing beneficial uses for treated produced water. In 2018, at a White House roundtable and stakeholder engagement event, the Water Security Grand Challenge was launched. As Melchert noted, quote, water is too precious to national security to not have a national strategy associated with it, end quote. The goals of the challenge are to advance transformational technology and innovation to meet global needs for safe, secure, and affordable water by 2030 through desalination technologies, transforming produced water from a waste to a resource, achieving near-zero water impact for new thermoelectric power plants, and significantly lower freshwater use intensity within the existing fleet, doubling resource recovery from municipal wastewater, and developing small modular energy water systems for urban, rural, tribal, national security, and disaster response settings. Quote, we know the industry spends more research dollars than the DOE ever does, she said. The taxpayer will get a return on his tax dollars when that technology is fully integrated, end quote. It's not uncommon, she added, for the agency to launch research projects and someone in the industry to notice its value and take over the effort. Melchert began her career during the George W. Bush administration when she joined the Energy Task Force and wrote the oil and gas technology sections of the president's national energy policy in 2001. Under President Obama, she was appointed committee manager of the President's National Commission on the BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill and offshore drilling in 2010. Water and Energy Conference will convene in 2022. For 2021, organizers plan to continue providing information through podcasts and other means. The story was written by Mella McEwen. It will be a year before the Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference again convenes in person, but that won't stop the flow of information in the interim. Quote, we will be featuring on our revamped website, which will be published in the next 4 to 6 weeks, monthly podcast topics from the Texas Legislature and New Mexico Legislature and Bureau of Land Management, said Blair Flanagan. Flanagan, who joined the University of Texas Permian Basin earlier this year to organize and oversee the conference, told a reporter telegram by telephone that representatives of the marketing firm helping with the conference will be heading to Austin to help with the podcasts. She said they will have conversations with a variety of people, from Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, to local state legislators like Tom Craddock and Brooks Landgraf. Quote, it will be a great way to keep everyone informed and excited about more information in 2022, she said. The conference has already been scheduled for February 22nd through 24th, 2022, at the Barbara and George H.W. Bush Convention Center. It will open February 22nd with a reception at the Petroleum Museum, followed February 23rd through 24th with the conference itself, which will be 2 days instead of the usual three. The importance of meeting in person extends beyond the presentations being made to networking among attendees. Quote, "Some of the best conversations take place in the back of the room," Flanagan said. Flanagan said since assuming her duties, she has been speaking with conference sponsors and past attendees as to what they want from the conference and how to make it better. She said everyone is looking for information on technology from regulators, from other operators as to their experiences and best practices. While she is not planning to veer significantly from past conferences, she said she hopes to have more breakout sessions where engineers can talk with engineers, financial people with financial people, and regulators with regulators. She also hopes for more involvement from exploration and production companies. Quote, "That way we go straight to the source. That's where a lot of the issues are," end quote. The ultimate goal after the final session and as attendees file out is, quote, "I want them to leave with a sense of purpose and a fuller sense of the scope of the issues and more knowledge than when they walked in the door. I want them to feel they got their time's worth and a productive return on their money." TIPRO, Texans for Natural Gas, combine organizations. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Two statewide industry associations, the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association and Texans for Natural Gas, announced Thursday they will be joining forces. TIPRO will integrate TNG into its education and advocacy platform. Quote, "The combination will strengthen our collective efforts to provide education, data, and analysis about the Texas oil and natural gas industry and our priorities," Ed Longenecker, president of TIPRO, told a reported telegram by email. Quote, "TNG brings a massive database of over 400,000 supporters, a strong digital footprint, and additional resources to help us tell our story to elected officials, stakeholders, and the general public. TNG will also enable TIPRO to more directly speak to and hear from the men and women who care about the future of energy in our state, far beyond our existing membership. TIPRO brings a dedicated policy and communication team that will utilize these assets to build greater awareness for our industry and its immense contributions," end quote. The combined entity is expected to greatly expand the industry's grassroots and rapid response capabilities to build greater support and awareness for oil and gas throughout the state, he added. Quote, "These resources will enhance TIPRO's established communication and advocacy programs at the state and federal level, providing us many additional tools to help advance our policy agenda and counter campaigns that are designed to hinder oil and natural gas development," Longenecker said. He predicted a tumultuous year ahead, citing the 87th Texas legislative session, a new presidential administration in Washington, D.C., and an escalation of efforts designed to reduce oil and gas production in the United States. Quote, "Anti-oil and natural gas campaigns and unrealistic energy policy proposals have unfortunately increased in recent years, which could have a devastating impact on our nation's economy, national security, and the livelihoods of millions of Americans that rely on the oil and natural gas sector," Longenecker said. "It's incumbent upon our organizations to provide a credible source for anyone seeking information about oil and natural gas and our ongoing work to support sound, science-based policies at all levels of government, end quote. This year marks TIPRO's 75th anniversary of advocating for the Texas oil and gas industry, he noted. Quote, our many contributions over the years have directly helped to shape and protect this critical industry for the benefit of all Texans. This combination of resources and expertise will help to advance our organization's mission and will provide a credible source for anyone seeking information about oil and natural gas, end quote. According to TIPRO, the state oil and gas industry provided economic support in 2020 despite many economic challenges. TIPRO estimates the industry employed more than 347,000 direct workers and supported 2 million indirect jobs. The industry also purchased U.S. goods and services in the amount of $198 billion, provided billions of dollars in production royalties to Texas families, and generated significant tax revenue and funds all aspects of the economy, including roads and infrastructure investment, schools and education, and first responders. The gross regional product for the Texas oil and gas industry equaled $278 billion last year, or 15% of the Texas economy.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, March 7th, 2021. Temporary Inflation by Dennis Elam, Associate Professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. He blogs at www.themarketperspective.com. Quote from the Associated Press, Fed Chair Jerome Powell announced that any inflation is temporary. No need for the Fed to alter its low interest rate policy. The Dow Industrials dropped 600 plus points, and the 10-year Treasury yield surged over 1.5% in response. Crude oil prices surged over $2. Ralph Nelson Elliott created his Elliott Wave Theory in the 1930s. It is a model of social behavior with a three steps one way and two the other structure. The psychology of market moves plays out in this fashion. Whatever the market, stock or crude oil prices, or in this case interest rates, the move begins from, in this case, a 40-year low. Wave one is a surprise, and the majority reject the notion that a trend change is underway. Wave two pulls back from the new high. This allows the doubters to say, I told you so. Then wave three eliminates all doubt by charging to a new high. Wave four usually alternates between wave two. If two were strong, four will likely be sideways. The final move is a wave five to a new high. Chairman Powell is denying we are in a wave one of higher interest rates. This morning, crude oil has risen another $1.84, and the 10-year yield is 1.58%. Mortgage rates have pushed over 3%. Fundamentally, this is no surprise. The Democrats are on a spending spree that would make Lyndon Johnson blush. Little noticed is a Congressional Budget Office estimate. The CBO estimates the national debt will be 200% of GDP by 2050. I don't put a lot of stock in 30-year predictions, but that prediction surely springs from the fact that for the first time since the end of World War II, total debt is 102% of GDP right now. The CBO estimate does not include the $1.9 trillion bill likely to pass the Senate next week. And Team Biden plans to plow $9 billion into minority communities. This is an echo of Lyndon's Model Cities program. Model Cities spent lots of money hiring bureaucrats, but never turned any city into a model. The XLE Energy ETF is up $1.45. Goldman Sachs sees Brent crude at $75 this year. Looks like that will occur sooner than most think. But don't expect the price rises to be temporary. The Economist. What Went Wrong? By M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group and distinguished professor at the International Institute for Advanced Studies. What went wrong with the Texas power grid during the recent extreme weather event? Everything. But it's complicated. One key issue is that Texas homes, buildings, and power infrastructures are geared toward dealing with the issue that we most often face, heat. Whether for an individual, homeowner, or a society, the decision regarding how much to spend on protecting from cold involves an assessment of the costs, benefits, and likelihood of extreme weather. As the recent historic freeze blanketed Texas, about 40% of generation capacity went offline as demand surged. Wind turbines froze and stopped working. Natural gas-fired generation initially increased, as did coal, but weather ultimately caused issues with these facilities as well. Some gas wells and pipelines were affected, and generators, which often purchase gas through interruptible contracts, were competing for supply with the natural gas directly used to warm about 35% of Texas homes. Given the vast resources in the state, a natural gas shortage is particularly difficult to stomach. Moreover, turbines, conventional power plants, gas wells, and pipelines routinely function under frigid conditions elsewhere, but winterization practices in Texas were clearly insufficient. Another issue is that much of Texas is an island when it comes to its power grid, not connected to other parts of the country. The Electric Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT, is tasked with ensuring peak demand can be met, yet the grid was apparently minutes away from catastrophic failure. The state certainly has the energy resources to meet its needs many times over, but choosing to go it alone brings a responsibility to set up and assure a secure power system. Placing all blame on wind energy ignores the benefits in the form of both zero emissions and lower electricity prices for Texans during much of the year. Hydrocarbon-fueled generation plants are also not the culprit, and they will remain essential to ensuring adequate capacity until at least the point when the power supply storage limitations are fully resolved. When the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining, renewables are not producing power, and conventionally fueled generation must be sufficient to meet demands. Texas' relatively more competitive power market has fostered lower prices than would otherwise have been in place, and more choices for Texas consumers. We have studied this issue several times. However, the recent problems have clearly illustrated some shortcomings with the structure that must be addressed. When the historic freeze led to an all-time peak winter power demand, the grid was not up to the task, and millions of Texans suffered. Pointing fingers isn't helpful, but better oversight and thoughtful tweaks to the current market platform can help to prevent another cataclysmic failure. More on that later. Stay safe.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, March 10th, 2021. This article is entitled, Oil Bulls Who Stayed Course Through Freefall Reap Rewards, by Michael Belusky, Bloomberg. An oil glut coupled with a virus-induced freefall in global demand sent energy stocks spiraling a year ago. Now, as the world begins to recover from the pandemic, oil bulls who stayed the course are enjoying big returns. The move is turning some fund managers' gaze back to Canada, where oil producers were clobbered a year ago, with even blue-chip names such as Suncor Energy Inc. losing two-thirds of their value in a matter of weeks. Improved Canadian oil pricing and fewer worries about pipeline capacity has funds such as Bison Interests LLC redeploying capital away from U.S. shale and into Canadian energy companies. The Houston-based fund, which has risen about 90% this year, is bullish on names such as Tamarack Valley Energy Limited that have exposure to Alberta's Clearwater oil play. Josh Young, Bison's chief investment officer, said the economics of the region are better than the Permian Basin. It's probably the most economic onshore resource play, he said. Bison seeks out disconnects between stock prices and the intrinsic value of a company and was able to deploy capital during the downturn, he said. The OPEC Plus decision last week to keep output largely unchanged, along with an attack on the world's largest crude terminal in Saudi Arabia, briefly sent Brent oil futures above $71 a barrel early Monday. Futures in New York sagged on Tuesday, with West Texas Intermediate crude for April trading at $63.76 a barrel as of 4:15 p.m. in New York. Investors are increasingly confident that any oversupply will be absorbed by soaring demand as more people are vaccinated and life slowly returns to normal. The fear of peak demand is leading us to the reality of peak supply, said Eric Nuttall, senior portfolio manager of the Nine Point Partners LP Energy Fund in Toronto, which has gained about 70% this year. There was less planning involved in last year's oversupply. Last March, coronavirus lockdowns began in Western economies just as Saudi Arabia began flooding the market with oil in an all-out price war. Energy equities plummeted. At one point, Canada's energy index was down 53% for the year. It's risen 19% to start 2021, with Vermilion Energy Inc. being among a handful of stocks that have risen over 60% during the same period. Then in January, in one of his first acts as U.S. president, Joe Biden canceled the Keystone XL pipeline, the type of move that would normally be a major setback for the patch. But with construction underway on other pipelines, the Canadian portion of Enbridge Inc.'s Line 3 online, and a drive for profitability through spending cuts, bulls have sent signals that this cycle may be different from its predecessors. Nuttall, whose holdings include MEG Energy Corporation and NuVista Energy Limited, says he thinks Canadian energy stocks have more upside versus those south of the border, where a new Biden administration is more hostile to fossil fuels. At the same time, Canadian pipeline capacity is improving despite the Keystone XL decision. Nuttall said that small to mid-cap shares have aided his fund's performance this year. Generalist investors who seek to own assets in a wide range of industries have avoided oil and gas stocks because of price volatility over the last few years. Stabilizing prices could change that equation, Nuttall said, as margins increase and other equities become overvalued. We've selectively added energy as energy companies cut spending amid rising demand, said David Picton, chief executive officer of Toronto-based Picton Mahoney Asset Management, which managed about $8.9 billion Canadian in client assets at the end of February. In an interview, Picton called those investments more of a trading call because he's not convinced that energy is a good long-term bet. This article is entitled U.S. Officials Report on Oil and Gas Sale Ban Due by Summer from the Associated Press. Billings, Montana. The Biden administration said Tuesday that it will deliver an interim report on its suspension of oil and gas sales from federal lands and waters by summer. But officials declined to state how long the moratorium could remain in place. A long-term ban on lease sales from the nation's vast publicly owned oil and gas reserves to address climate change would fulfill a campaign pledge from a Democratic President Joe Biden. The prospect has rankled Republicans and petroleum industry representatives who have said that Biden is putting tens of thousands of jobs at risk as the economy reels from the pandemic. Oil and gas from federal reserves in western states and the Gulf of Mexico make up about a quarter of U.S. production. Lease sales to companies for drilling have been a frequent target of lawsuits from environmentalists who contend officials have ignored the oil and gas program's climate impact. Biden announced a temporary suspension of new sales 1 week after he took office. Tuesday's announcement offered the first details of a review of the Interior Department program that officials said will examine climate issues and whether taxpayers are getting a fair return on sales of energy leases to private companies. Last month, the administration postponed lease sales in the Gulf and four states, Colorado, Montana, Utah, and Wyoming. The federal oil and gas program is not serving the American public well, Interior Department Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary Laura Daniel Davis said in a statement. It's time to take a close look at how to best manage our nation's natural resources with current and future generations in mind. The administration has pledged to spend billions to assist in the transition away from fossil fuels such as oil, gas, and coal.